Are you ready to become toxic person proof?
Hey guys, Sarah K. Ramsey here to help you find love and success after a toxic relationship so you can design a life you're actually excited about living.
Hello, wonderful. This is Sarah and I'm here with Peyton Lynch, who wrote Rise from the Ashes. And we have already been, gosh, we've like bonded so much even before this call, this in common, and really a conversation about a rebirth and rising from the ashes and life not going exactly how you thought it was going to and having to start over. So hello, Peyton, how are you?
Hello, Sarah. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a bit about your book, about why you wrote this.
Sure. So, you know, it really started when I met my husband. We met in 2013. We were just dating at the time. And it was only a few months when we got into September, which it's funny now looking back on the timeline of things, but he took me out on a date that night. And I thought it was just like a normal date in September. Again, only been dating like a few months. And what I learned in that time was that he was actually sharing with me the story of how he lost his father. And it was actually the anniversary of September 11th that day. And his father, Robert Henry Lynch Jr., was a property manager at 2 World Trade Center. And my then boyfriend was sitting across the table from me recounting the day that he remembers of 9/11 and how his father called home to say that he was safe, that he was out of the building, but that he then later went back into the building to save other people's lives. And I was glad we were in, if you're familiar with Bonefish Grill restaurant, it was very dimly lit. And I'm grateful it was, because I couldn't hide my shock or just my set, like my grief for this person who was sharing all this with me. And also just the shock that the person that I knew, I couldn't imagine having gone through this. I mean, I'm a bit biased, but I think my husband is an extremely kind, you know, resilient, compassionate human being. And I just kept thinking, if this were me, I would not be like that. I think I'd be pretty bitter and angry. Like, I just couldn't imagine how he had been able to go through this. And, you know, that sort of lay dormant for many years. I knew that my husband was definitely not defined by this tragedy, but shaped by it in a lot of ways. And then 2020 happened. And, you know, there was this little thing called a pandemic. You might have heard of it that happened. And my husband lost his job. We're both cast members at the Walt Disney World Resort. And
yeah,
we love it. It was obviously very
exciting. It's nice to work at the happiest place in the world, right?
I mean, there's nothing better. We moved here to work here. And, you know, obviously the entertainment industry was hit pretty hard last year. A lot of industries were. So, you know, he lost his job and we were already in the midst of a battle with infertility that we're still going through. We both lost grandparents last year. Like, it was just, it was not our year. I know it wasn't anybody's year, but it really felt like it wasn't our year. And I was really going through it because this was my first real tragedy as, you know, in my entire life. And it was happening to me as an adult. I started going through infertility. I was 25 and, you know, I'm very fortunate. I didn't go through a lot of adversity in my childhood, but, you know, what I started to recognize in my husband was even though he was definitely struggling, right? I mean, he was just as upset with me in this moment. But he was able to have like a different perspective because he went through something really challenging in his childhood. He was able to see, you know what, we can get past this. This is just one chapter. And at first I was so mad at him. I'm like, you know what, just be angry with me, which what does that do? You know, we're both going to sit around and mope and be angry. But that's what I really wanted until I took a step back and said, you know what, there's probably something for me to learn from his resilience and what he's learned over the past 20 years after losing his father. So I started talking with him more about what are those things that you've learned over this time? How did you go through this? And how are you able to, you know, reflect now in a different way than I'm able to, you know, being in the middle of my first big tragedy? And after we had talked, his family had connected me with an organization called Tuesday's Children. And they're an incredible organization that came out of 9/11 to help those families, but also now supports other families impacted by war violence and other tragedies of the like. And they actually put out a note to everyone in their community. And I had about a dozen or so 9/11, we call them surviving children, reach out to me to share their stories and share, you know, the really awful dark parts, but also the really beautiful parts that came from that tragedy. And so it really just started as, you know, a learning lesson for myself. But I realized, especially after a year like the one we've just had, that these lessons would be pertinent for everyone going through challenging times, and to remind them that they can rise from the ashes of their own tragedy as well.
Well, I remember feeling exactly like you felt. And I remember going through my own life tragedy and thinking, oh, I don't have enough experience to know what that the next chapter after the next chapter is going to be. And so it feels so scary when it feels like this is the only chapter I'm ever going to live in. This is the only version of me I'm ever going to be. This is the only version of emotion and feelings and pain I'm ever going to live in. And there's no way to outsource that, right? It's like we can't, like none of us get to avoid it, whether we are married or divorced or this or that. But I read in the book David and Goliath by Malcolm Gladwell how many CEOs had lost a parent early on. Because once you've already lived through the worst thing that could ever happen to you, everything else seems pretty easy and what, you know, natural, you know, it feels like that you're able to hit into that upgraded version of you more quickly and get into that. Okay, this isn't going to be forever. We're going to move on. We're going to do this. So that very much aligns with what your husband experienced.
Yes, absolutely. And you actually just reminded me, we had an SVP. His name is Talak at the Walt Disney Company. He's now moved on to another company at this point, but he actually lost his daughter and does a TED talk about how it was a very violent loss of his daughter, unfortunately. And he says, like, you know, I didn't want this. I didn't choose my tragedy. And my husband says this all the time. I didn't choose to lose my dad. We didn't choose to be infertile. Nobody does choose whatever their, you know, challenge is. But because of it, you know, Talak had shared, he is a better leader who can advocate for better company policy. And, you know, that's what I've seen with a lot of the 9/11 surviving children as well, is that now they're stepping into the workforce, right? The youngest of them is 20. So they're all adults, which is insane to think about. But now they can be advocates for change. And, you know, the same can be said for anyone who has experienced grief and really hasn't found that they've gotten that support, whether that's in their own communities or in their companies. The empathy we gain as we walk through life's most challenging times, it becomes our superpower. And that's how we can shape the way that we live and work.
I love that. So one of the ways we shape how we live and work is an idea about post-traumatic growth, right? Can you explain to people what post-traumatic growth is? Because we're probably familiar with post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD or complex PTSD, but what is post-traumatic growth?
Post-traumatic growth is the growth that someone experiences after a trauma. And this can manifest in so many different ways, but it often has meant stronger relationships with those around you, a heightened self-esteem, and a sense of deeper purpose for their lives. I'll share a really poignant example. I spoke to a licensed health counselor. Her name's Stacey Boyer, and she worked with many of the folks in Coral Springs, Florida, after the Parkland, Florida shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School. And she spoke about how those children, many of them were very privileged that their parents gave them the option to move if they so choose. They didn't have to go back to that school again. And many of them chose to stay so that they could stay within that community. And then they started the March for Our Lives campaign, which is an incredible campaign of people who have been advocating against gun violence and, you know, towards better regulation around those things. So, you know, again, nobody would have chosen this to happen to them, but because it did, they're able to tap into something that I think really is innate within all of us, but that greater empathy and that understanding that this happened and now I'm able to apply it to something good. There's that purpose associated with it that really helps propel people forward.
And when something tragic happens, you know, in my work, it's people dealing with toxic people. It's like, oh, why did I have to go through this? And in my work and the work with women, I say, we didn't understand this concept before. You know, the idea of like a personality disorder or someone who was just kind of mean on purpose or like had extreme mental health issues, that was not a conversation people were having 100 years ago. And it's not, I cannot tell you how many stories I hear of mothers whose daughters or children came and told them they were being sexually abused. And the mom said, "Oh, we don't want to talk about that. Oh, right. We don't want to tell anybody about that. Oh, we don't want to, you know, you're going to break up the family. You're going to break up." And in previous generations, it was such a cultural norm to hide what was happening. Keep it in the family. Don't tell everybody about daddy's drinking problem. Don't tell everybody about the uncle that's coming and molesting you. Don't tell everyone that mom never gets out of bed, right? It was such a cultural norm to live in secret and live in hiding and live right. in. And there are many things that previous generations have done really well to make our lives better. That wasn't one.
Right.
Right. But to think now, you know, about a child coming to me and saying, "I'm being, you know, sexually molested," and me just going, oh, we don't want to rock the boat. Like, what? Like, that seems, you know, that seems, but it was such a cultural norm. And so why do bad things happen? Why do toxic people exist? You know, why do people die? Why do people struggle with infertility? To make the next generation better. There is no other answer.
Right.
So we can break those norms, break it being normal to have bad things happen at the hands of other people, make, you know, school shootings no longer normal.
Right.
That's all there is. There right. is no why, because everything else is terrible.
Right. And I think we can totally get lost in the why. And I've been there, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I have sat in this room and other rooms of my house and all other places, you know, just being like, why me? Why is this happening to me? Why am I watching all of my friends get pregnant and have their happily ever afters? Like, what did I do? Like, really, mm-hmm. I took it very personally. And I still do, to be honest, sometimes. But I think when I shifted my focus from why me and why is this happening and realized that I don't have to be a victim, I can be a victor. And mm-hmm. when I started sharing, the amount of people that came out of the woodwork to say, "Me too. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I felt like I couldn't share. I felt like I was alone. Oh my goodness. I couldn't." First, it made me so sad that there are all these people going through this. But second, it made me feel empowered to continue sharing, because how else will we know that we mm-hmm. aren't the only ones and mm-hmm. that we can get through this together? And so, again, you know, I had this conversation so many times as I interviewed these children of 9/11, because I worried, am I re-traumatizing these folks, right? Am I doing more?
Opening
the door. But I had spoken with, her name's Kay Thomas, another excellent health counselor. She works for North County Lifeline, working with children who go through sex trafficking. So really, really traumatic events that she works through. And she told me that, yes, you know, recounting can absolutely be traumatic, but when folks understand the purpose in their pain, mm-hmm. it helps them walk through it. And so for those folks who did step forward and wanted to have the conversation with me, and I heard this from many of them, they said, you know, sharing helps me to rationalize what I went through and say, you know what, I'm going to help the next person. And right. I've had that same experience. And so, you know, is there a day that goes by that I say, well, you know, I'm really glad I'm going through this so I can help other people? Like, no, of course I would just like to have a baby. But you know, I understand the purpose in the pain. And I think that's what helps a lot of people move into that post-traumatic growth phase of mm-hmm. their lives.
Well, and understanding maybe not the purpose behind the pain, because then it can feel like God is doing this to me or the universe right. is doing this to me, but understanding how to make purpose from
right.
the pain.
Right.
Is that would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're a book nerd like me and heart all the books, then don't forget to check out Becoming Toxic Person Proof. Clear the confusion and learn to trust yourself. You'll be able to recognize it on Amazon or wherever books are sold by the
big red flag on the front cover. The red flags that we ignored and the red flags we don't want to ignore in the future. So check out the book, Becoming Toxic Person Proof, and don't forget to leave a review so other people can know this information is the right information for them.
So what are some steps that you have found to move into post-traumatic growth? If you are listening to this and you feel like, my life just sucks, this is terrible, you know, how do you start to move into that post-traumatic growth stage?
Sure. So one of the biggest insights I found from the 9/11 surviving children is a focus on gratitude. And I know that probably sounds like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to start thinking happy thoughts and all of a sudden I'm going to feel better. And I was a skeptic as well because, you know, being in the middle of this, like you had mentioned earlier, it's like, will I ever not feel like this? And the reality is, you know, those feelings are going to come, they're going to ebb and flow. And there's some days where I'm like, yep, I'm closer on my path. I'm moving forward. And then I take two steps back. And the reality is I had to realize that grief is not a straight line. That was a big piece for me.
Have you seen those charts where they like zigzag and it's like, oh, here I am. Then I'm back down here. And then here I am. But eventually you're moving up the mountain, right?
Exactly.
So it's not going in a straight line, but it is moving up.
It's absolutely moving up. And the two steps back, that's okay. We need to make space and honor that. And that's what I found with a lot of those folks, but also, you know, actively taking time to be grateful for things. And when I say actively, I mean putting it into practice. Every morning, waking up, writing down three things that you're grateful for, even if that's, you know what, the birds are chirping today. I mean, if you really can't come up with anything, that is something that you can hone in on. And again, was very skeptical about it, but I did a lot more research that shows, you know, again, 21 days it takes to build up a habit. And most, I believe it's about 90% of our thoughts are repetitive thoughts. So if you're constantly thinking negative thoughts, well, guess what? You're on that negative loop all day long. And so we do have a lot of power over our thoughts if we take them captive and say, you know what, is this truth or is this not truth? And if we also set up a routine of, you know, taking that time to think about things that we are grateful for. And again, not to negate the bad stuff, because the bad stuff is there and we have to honor how we're feeling in those moments. But I found an incredible shift after about 21 days or so of constantly changing my thinking patterns and then continuing to be mindful of when I spiral, because I'm a spiral thinker, right? I'm like, you know, one bad thought and then the next bad thought and the next bad thought. So another great tip for that, if you're finding you're in some of those negative feedback loops, actually it was Stacey Boyer, one of the health counselors that I had mentioned. She had mentioned wearing a hair tie on your wrist or something of that nature. And every time you start going into that, you know, feedback loop, just snapping it and literally snapping yourself out of that feedback loop. So doing something physical to help, you know, bring your brain back into the present moment is a way that I found very effective when I'm starting to get into that negative space.
Well, another thing that I've studied this off and on for several years, but I'm currently restudying it and I'm obsessed with it, is the idea of practicing difficult emotions. Mm-hmm. And I was a piano player, so I practiced piano growing up. I've never practiced the cello. Okay. So I can say I'm a great musician. And if you hear me playing the piano, you will believe me. And if you hear me play the cello, you will not believe me because I've not practiced the cello.
Right.
But sometimes we get in this real habit of because we say, oh, I want to feel our emotions, which is appropriate, but there is a balance because you don't want to only practice sadness, only practice anger, only practice frustration, because that releases chemicals in your body that says anger is normal. Sad is my new normal. Being frustrated is my new normal. And if the only thing we're practicing is sadness and grief and telling ourselves we're feeling our emotions, and we never practice gratitude, we never practice joy, we never practice anything else, it's just going to be like if I played the cello. It'd be terrible. It's terrible. Right. And so many of us need to practice happiness and joy. One of my favorite strategies for this is when I was in a negative feedback loop as I was building this business, I would play James Brown, I Feel Good, that song, mm-hmm. na, 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 and I knew I would, because it's impossible to be in a bad mood listening to that song. And I would create my gratitude list while I was listening to that. So very first thing, I would sit at my desk and play James Brown with like 2.5 minutes. And then I would write the things I was grateful for, the things I was, you know, thankful for. And it really was this, like, you know, we talk about superfoods, like it was like, oh, it's like a superfood. That was like a superfood exercise for me, because the neural pathways allowed me to practice happiness. It set my day.
Yep.
It hit that gratitude thing. I was telling myself I feel good, even if I didn't feel good. But by the end of the 2.5 minutes, I certainly felt better every time.
Yes.
Every time.
It's funny because I see you smiling as well. And that's another great thing. We talk about like the physical impacting mm-hmm. our mental, emotional, spiritual. And it's so true. There's a great TED Talk out there. And I wish I remember the name of it. But, you know, the person, she shares about how she went through a really horrible time and that how she actually started using power poses to
Amy Cuddy.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. But,
you know, and I love that. I was just talking to someone who was going into an interview the other day. I was like, yeah, use a power pose. And it's true.
And if you don't know Amy Cuddy, it's like what you would think of, like Wonder Woman or Superman standing, yes, like with your hands on your, yep, hips. Yes.
Hands on, uh-huh, the hips, hands behind the head, you know, whatever, uh-huh, makes you feel powerful. And smiling is that same thing, right? When we put, mm-hmm, a smile on, we talk a lot about this at Disney too, right? You know, mm-hmm, our jobs are to create happiness for other people. But oftentimes when we do that, we feel happy as well. So yeah, our common greatest reward. And so, you know, putting a smile on, I just feel better. Even if I was doing it for show or whatever, it starts to, you know, get into your body and you automatically start to feel better. So, you know, again, it's a practice, all of it. It takes time. It's not going to just happen overnight.
Yeah. And I think people get so caught up on the fake it till you make it. And I hate, yeah, that concept because I don't want to be fake. Like there were times in my life that I had to fake things, pretend I was okay and I wasn't. And I hate to, if someone says fake it till you make it, I'm like, oh, I hate that concept. But when I think about in terms of practicing, okay, I'm practicing feeling happy today. I'm practicing smiling. Yes. I'm practicing starting new conversations with people. I'm practicing some of those, you know, more positive feelings. That usually rests a little easier on people's tongue, you know, because, yes, it's like, okay, well, you need to practice just like you would practice piano or practice basketball or practice golf or practice a sales pitch, whatever you've had to practice in your life. It tends to be a shorter bridge to cross, a little easier thing for people to digest versus fake it till you make it.
Yes.
I don't want to fake anything. I want to live authentically. It's like, okay, yes, let's just practice. Let's take some of the steps of practicing.
Yeah, all of it. It takes time. And I think that was something that I struggled with at the beginning of this journey is, you know, well, meditation's only for like really Zen people or, you know, gratitude's for people who aren't going through infertility. And the reality is it's like we don't get to choose our circumstances, but we do get to choose the practices that we take to, you know, handle those circumstances. And you know, did you ever think that maybe Zen people are Zen because they meditate, not the other way around? Like I started to have some of these conversations with myself about, you know, the importance of this and how crucial it could be to my development. And I'm so glad I did. And I'm so glad I started on this discovery and I'm nowhere near the end of this. And I don't think we ever are, right? We're constantly sort of becoming who we are. And that's the beauty of this whole thing.
So when people ask me, and I'm being very brave to say this, like out there right now, but when people ask me what I'm afraid of, because they're like, you don't appear to be afraid of anything. Like you just jump into this and you put out this. And it's like, they're like, what are you afraid of? And I was like, I'm afraid of what else life has to teach me. Because you don't get to choose what hand you're dealt. You just kind of figure out how to win with the cards in your hand and win through gratitude and not beating others necessarily, but win in that game of life of developing and cultivating that joy when it doesn't feel like there's ever going to be a next chapter. Because I'm so glad you said it that way. Because I remember it so distinctly. And I was like, what's easier for other people? Because they've already been through something bad and then it got better. But mine hasn't gotten better at all. So I can't even like relate to that right now. So I love that you said that. And I love this conversation. Anything else you want to add to the idea of post-traumatic growth?
You know, I think I would just say for anyone who's going through it right now and they're not able to see that next chapter, you know, I want you to know that your test will become your testimony. And that doesn't make it feel any better that you have to go through it. But, you know, that testimony is going to help so many people. And if you're in hell right now, just keep walking. I mean, why would you, who wants to stay in hell, right? And I think for a while, I sort of did want to. And I know that sounds weird because we just sort of get into that feelings and we just want to stay in this space and it's comfortable, because comfortable being sad. But the reality is this is happening. And so we have an opportunity to grow from it. And so, you know, I hope that you're able to continue walking through it. And you know, again, our circumstances, they're going to be what they are, like you said. So it's what we do with them that really matters.
I love it. Okay. And I have to tell you one story. So I don't usually like giggle at inappropriate times on the podcast. I'm actually very reserved. But when you talked about Bonefish Grill, I about lost it because, and you're sitting there like telling me about your husband's dad dying. And I was like, keep it together, Sarah, keep it together, Sarah, keep it together, Sarah. But you talked about how dimly lit it was.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we were very first dating, my husband and I went to a date at Bonefish and he accidentally dipped. He's so like put together. He never does stuff like this. He accidentally dipped his bread in like the candle. In the candle oil instead of the olive oil. And so he dipped the bread and he was like, this is terrible. This is terrible. And I was like, that's the wick for the candle. Like that's what's like burning the candle. That's not the olive oil. And he never does stuff like that. And I had forgotten that story. And we had been to Bonefish forever. And so you said that. And you were like, you know, it's dimly lit. I was like, oh, yeah, I do know it's dimly lit.
Now you know why I include that detail. Because, like, for if you haven't been there, it's so dark in there. It's really something.
Yeah, so dark. So takeaways from today. Participate in post-traumatic growth. Look for the next chapter. And if you're at Bonefish Grill, be careful not to dip your bread in the candle oil because it does not taste good. Peyton, tell people where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Absolutely. So the book is available for pre-sale of a signed copy, a signed paperback copy on www.peytonlynch.com, and will be available on Amazon and other retailers at the end of August.
Awesome.
If you're interested in following along with me and the book and my other antics, you can also follow me on Instagram at Peyton Meets World.
Awesome. Thank you, Peyton, for helping us on our journey to becoming toxic person proof.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Hello, wonderful. This is Sarah, and I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. I know that there was something that you can take away to help you get past the past, get real about the present, or get serious about your future. And if I did my job, then hopefully it will help you with all three. If you are not in my Facebook group, Finding Love and Success After a Toxic Relationship, then consider this your personal invitation from me. I'm there live, there's tons of support, and most importantly, tons more information to help you on your journey to become toxic person proof.